The first step is to join the movement.
Begin to mobilize and move people to action now.
Step number two, roll out.
The way I roll is when you've shown one time you can do it, no excuses after that.
We're your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with Roland Martin. Roland Martin.
Today on News One Now, Sandra Bland, how did she die in a Texas jail cell? Cops say she died of asphyxiation. The family says there's no way she could kill herself. We'll have the details on her case. Also, hailing a cab while black, pollster Connell Belcher breaks down the new data showing the truth behind transportation discrimination. And you want your funk uncut? George Clinton is in the house talking his new memoir. Also, which one of your favorite stars got an Emmy nomination? It's a whole list of folks. Viola Davis, Kerry Washington. We'll tell you exactly who got one and who got snubbed. And Lee Daniels has something to say about the Emmys as well. Trust me, you don't want to miss that. It is time to bring the funk on News One Now on TV One. It has been 4 days since Sandra Bland was found dead in a jail cell in Texas. That took place 3 days after there was a traffic stop in Waller County where she was arrested for supposedly being belligerent to a police officer. They cited her for an improper lane change. Now, the NAACP, they are on the case, as well as state officials there as well, and even the National Organization for Women have stepped up demanding justice, and also the Department of Justice get involved. But we want to go back to the beginning of the case. Sandra Bland was driving near the campus of Prairie View A&M University, where she was a graduate, where she also was about to start a new job. An officer pulled her over for an improper lane change. Now, in this video here, you can see Sandra on the ground. You'll see her on the ground, and what she is saying is, quote, "You just slammed my head into the ground. Do you not even care about that?" Police say that she was argumentative. They say they asked her to get out of her car, at which point police say Sandra kicked the trooper who pulled her over. They arrested her and charged her with assault against a public servant. Officers locked Sandra up in jail. 3 days later, they found her dead in her jail cell. The coroner ruled her death a suicide by hanging, but her sister says there's no way she would have done that.
To know Sandy was to love her. She was someone who was extremely spontaneous, spunky, outgoing, truly filled with life and joy. And so when you think through the circumstances that have been shared with us to this point, it is unimaginable and difficult for us to wrap our minds around the Sandy that we knew, for this to be characteristic of her.
Now, Bland was an engaging person. She had posted over a dozen Sandy Speaks videos on her Facebook page. Here's a small part of the very first one.
I'm gonna take the situations, the ideas, everything that's going on in the news, and I want to get feedback from the children to kind of start opening the door to them and educating them on interacting with police. They are getting smarter. Technology is getting better. So why not educate them on interacting with the people who are really important to our survival? This thing that I'm holding in my hand, this telephone, this camera, it is quite powerful. Social media is powerful. We can do something with this. If we want to change, we can really, truly make it happen.
So here's where we stand. There's going to be a rally today, noon, outside the Waller County Sheriff's Office. Also, a bail bondsman told the Daily Beast that just before her death, Sandra Bland called him hoping to make bond and get out of jail. In that news conference, her sister also said she talked to her on Saturday, said she was trying to arrange bail, but that Sandra had been complaining about severe pain in her shoulder or her arm. The FBI and the Texas Rangers are investigating her death. Yesterday, I talked to State Senator Royce West. guests. Also, State Senator Rodney Ellis of Houston, and Royce West is in Dallas. They are the two African Americans, the only state senators in Texas, and both of them on the case as well. On Tuesday, at Prairie View A&M University in the Juvenile Justice Building, there's going to be a private meeting where Senator West and Senator Ellis are pulling together all various officials to update local organizers, also update Prairie View A&M officials. That time has not been set of that particular meeting, but they do plan to have a news conference after that. And we spoke about this rally. I talked to Gary Bledsoe, who is the head of the Texas NAACP, on yesterday. He also said that he will have folks at that particular rally. LaVon Mosley, who is one of the organizers of the rally, joins us right now on the phone. LaVon, welcome to News One Now.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And we're just here busy in Prairie View, Texas, here in Waller County, trying to get organized for today's rally scheduled for 12 o'clock at the Waller County Jail.
A lot of folks don't realize that there's been a lot of tension there when it comes to Prairie View A&M students in Waller County. There's a long history there when it comes to denying voting rights as well. And so that's also one of the reasons why people are asking for a different focus to be put on this particular case, correct?
That is correct. And we're actually asking for an outside prosecutor because there is, like you said, there is a long history of racial tension here. There's been a long history of disparity here. And you have to always remember that Prairie View A&M University was once Alta Vista Plantation here in the state of Texas. So you still have a lot of that mentality and a lot of that thought that still exists here. It's unfortunate, but that's the way it is these days. And we're going to deal with that, and we're going to we want to have a peaceful rally. We want all people of all colors, all ethnicities to come together because this is our problem and not just a racial problem.
In talking to Gary Bledsoe, one of the things that he said is that they hope that the family will work with them to get an independent autopsy done as opposed to only have the autopsy results of the coroner there in Waller County.
That's correct. And I did briefly talk with the mom early on in the situation that you did mention that they wanted to definitely have an independent autopsy done. And we're asking for a special prosecutor to come in as well and try to look at all the evidence and all the facts. They did hold a press conference on yesterday, Waller County did, the DA, DA Elton Mathis, and they did have rule the official cause of death was suicide. And we all know that to anybody that knew Sandy Bland, know that she had a thirst for life. She was connected to her church. And those aren't characteristics that somebody who has a suicidal behavior.
Talk about today's rally taking place. And how many folks do you expect to be in attendance today? And also, I got last night I saw on social media, there was a statement that was released by Sigma Gamma Rho, the sorority of Sandra Bland, where they said that the family members of Sandra Bland have asked the sorority not to be involved in various hashtag campaigns or to participate in protests or march. Have you heard that as well?
I haven't heard that as well, but there's been a lot of miscommunication, a lot of things going around, but I haven't heard that particular story.
All right, then. How many folks do you expect to be out there today, and what time is this starting? And also, I got a tweet from someone else saying that was something at 4 o'clock, but I only know about the rally taking place at noon.
Right. We have a rally that's taking place at noon, and then we just want to have a resurgence of people again at 4 o'clock because we do want to keep the pressure on. We want the county to know that the times for those old days are over. We want cooperation, we want transparency, and we want justice for Sandy Bland.
So how can folks reach you or get more information on the rally?
Yeah, they can get more information. If somebody needs to get more information, they can contact me at 832-594-0942. Or they can just show up at 12 o'clock at the Waller County Jail in Hempstead, Texas. We expect well over 500 people to be out there. Social media has just really gone out, and people are responding, people are reacting. And I think it's just time for us to start closing that wound that's been in this county for so long.
All right. LaVon Mosley, we certainly appreciate it. Thank you so very much. We come back and we're going to chat with our panel about this particular case. Again, that's drawn so much attention and people are asking so many questions. That's coming up next on News One Now on TV One.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America. It's News One Now with your host, Roland Martin.
Folks, yesterday, deadly attacks at two military facilities in Chattanooga, Tennessee. The gunman identified as 24-year-old Muhammad Youssef Abdulaziz shoots and kills four Marines in Thursday's attack. Officials say he also wounded two other service members and a police officer. Officials say Abdulaziz, who was killed in the exchange, was born in Kuwait and came to the United States in 1996. It's unclear if and when he became an American citizen. A U.S. official tells NBC News that he was not on law enforcement radar concerning possible terror links or aspirations and says the FBI was not aware of him as being any kind of threat. A U.S. attorney yesterday at a news conference called it domestic terrorism, but then later backed off of that particular claim. I want to go back to the Sandra Bland story. Our panel, joined by Rashad Robinson, executive director of colorchange.org, Joy Jefferson Nuri, founder and CEO of In the Public Eye Communications, and David Swertlick, assistant editor at the Washington Post. Folks, I talked to State Senator Royce West yesterday. He has called on the Department of Public Safety to release the dashboard cam video to see, so we can see exactly what happened, whether or not she did indeed kick the officer, whether or not she was belligerent to the officer as well.
I think that that's a part of the story here. The video should absolutely be released, but I think there's a whole piece, just not in terms of what happened in the moment of her being captured by the police and taken in, but all the things that happened once she was, you know, with the police during that time, those days when she came in a healthy woman, you know, looking to start a new life, and now all of a sudden hanging in a jail cell. None of this makes any sense, and this goes into the long-term sort of analysis that we have around why we simply can't trust police to police themselves.
Well, also, again, in one of the videos, she talked about what it means to be black in America and how stressful and difficult it is. And in one of the videos, she talked about suffering from what she called depression and PTSD. She said being black in America is hard.
Yeah.
And I think that there have been conservative news outlets over the last day that have tried to turn those statements on Facebook into some sort of suicide note. But I think, as Merlin has just said, that a lot of black people, a lot of people of color around the world, whether you're black or not, suffer some level of depression or anxiety around the color of your skin as you move around the world, throughout your world. And I, you know, about the what happened to her after the arrest. Obviously, she was complaining about her head, and she complained to her family about her arm. I have not seen any evidence that she got any medical care once she got into the jail. She complained to someone she spoke to that her arm was broken, and no one had went to address it. So that comes back to Freddie Gray, who kept saying, or Eric Garner, I can't breathe, or there's something wrong with me, and nobody addresses the medical needs. Once you become a criminal, you become non-human.
David?
Yeah, no, I don't feel like I have a good handle on what happened once she was in jail and once she was in police custody.
Well, yeah, but, I think anybody does.
Yeah, right, no, but I'd want to go back to, look, why is Sandra Bland being arrested for an improper lane change and then whatever else happened after that? I know we keep saying it over and over because these incidents keep happening, whether it's Marlene Pinnock being beaten by the California Highway Patrol or Eric Garner in Staten Island. It seems to me, just from what we see on these videos, Roland, that you have police who don't know how to handle situations and don't seem to understand, look, you're on the clock. And not only are you on the clock, but you're working for the taxpayers. So if, for instance, someone is, as they say, aggressive or belligerent, then give them a citation. If they're more aggressive, give them another citation. But don't, it should not wind up with her on her face in the dirt with someone's knee in her back and then in jail for an improper lane change.
And this is also why, again, she was arrested a week ago.
Right.
She dies Monday. Mm-hmm. If I'm the Texas Department of Public Safety, I'm not waiting for a state senator to ask for the video to be released. It goes back to what the Department of Justice said about the city of Ferguson. Had they operated properly the moment it actually happened, mm-hmm, and released information, then people are not asking these questions. If you say she's acting belligerently, okay, you release the dash cam video, and if it shows she's getting out of the car, yelling and screaming and cussing the officer out and kicks the officer, and there's no provocation, then people go, okay, we see why somebody was arrested. This to me, again, is an example why they need to learn how to, if you're gonna release information, you do it now. You don't allow something to build up and then you wait to release the information.
This is the complicated thing that video has entered into this, whether it's cell phone video, whether it's dash cam video. It's the complicated X factor that police departments simply aren't ready for. For decades and hundreds of years in this country, police officers, law enforcement could make up any story around black people and how they were treating black people. And we hear stories over and over again how the stories of the community and the stories of law enforcement don't align.
Walter Scott, the officer put in the report, he gave him medical attention, and we saw the video, and that was nuts.
Well, absolutely. And they just are not prepared to have to deal with a world where there's actually video accountability. So it's not a black person's word against law enforcement, but there's actually something else which makes us a lot more believable in these situations in front of the public. And that is going to be really hard for law enforcement to have to actually face the truth.
And the answer to your question is they don't release the video because the officer has done something improper. The officer is wrong. Even if a woman gets out of the car and kicks you, there is a way to do this rather than throw her on the ground and slam her head into the ground. There are procedures. DC police have procedures. There are police forces in this country who know how to handle a situation like that, and nobody dies. And so I'm wondering if publications like yours or anybody is doing any sort of studies on why the police begin in a state of rage. Why do they start there?
Again, first of all, we've seen that. I mean, bottom line is officers would talk about how difficult their job is and how stressful it is. And again, I don't care what anybody says. Folks always talk about how the person who's being stopped has to act. How the officer begins the whole process also plays a part. And this is why we saw this in Rialto, California, why body cameras make a difference. Mm-hmm. Because what that showed was the percentage of cases where people alleged police brutality went down, mm-hmm. and the percentage of cops who they went after also went down. And so if I got a body camera, I now am able to say, forget the person I'm stopping. You now are seeing how I respond.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And so if I was proper, that's talking in the proper tone and everything else, right, then that person decided to go nuts, then you see the video. So that's why I don't understand people who oppose body cameras, because it actually benefits the police officer and the person who they're stopping.
Exactly.
Right. No, it bears repeating. All the facts aren't in. The police have their side of the story, and they do have a dangerous job. But right, they are professionals. As a citizen, I don't expect them to be friendly, but I do expect them to act like professionals.
I actually want to push back. You know, there are many jobs on the list much more dangerous than being a police officer. The rate of police officers that actually are killed every year in the line of duty is low. I know we feel like we have to throw out that line before we get into critiquing the police, like it's a really dangerous job. There are a lot of dangerous jobs where people don't act with impunity to the community in the process.
Right.
We have to hold law enforcement accountable if we are going to make our community safe. And simply saying that they have a dangerous job, that the statistics don't always bear out that it's that dangerous, is not sort of an acceptable way for us to be sort of talking about this.
Hold tight 1 second. Coming up, the race for a cab, America's foremost black pollster, with proof that hailing a ride is black and a white issue. Also, your favorite Emmy winner, your favorite actor, did they get an Emmy nomination? We'll break that down for you. And also, I got a special guest who's going to be on the show, and some of y'all might know exactly who he is.
Yo, George Dr. Funkenstein Clinton here, getting ready to kick it with Roland Martin on TV One. We're going to do the dog, y'all.
Okay, government might have shut down.
Let's end this shutdown right now. Let's put people back to work.
Listen, there's never been a president in our history that did not negotiate over the debt limit. Never. Not once.
But you can count on us. Welcome to News One Now with Roland Martin.
We at the Justice Department are taking a comprehensive approach to stamping out inequality and ending discrimination whenever and wherever it may occur. And you know what that means. That means we have to look in the classrooms and the voting booths, right? We have to look in the boardrooms and the border areas. Am I right about it, Brother Brooks? Our attorneys and investigators, led by our outstanding Civil Rights Division, are present on the ground, fighting all fronts to bring equal rights and equal justice to all Americans, no matter who they are, no matter where they come from or what they look like.
That was Attorney Loretta Lynch, Attorney General Loretta Lynch, speaking at the NAACP Annual Convention in Philadelphia a couple of days ago. And the key point there was dealing with discrimination. We all experience this when it comes to trying to get a cab as well. And black folks know this. What happens when you raise your hand, you're trying to get them to stop, and they just keep going even though ain't nobody in the cab. Well, Cornell Belcher, one of America's top pollsters, looked at the data and broke it down in terms of to explain this transportation discrimination, and he joins us right now, and our panel is still with us. So, Cornell, what do your findings tell us?
Well, one of the things is, Roland, we always have this conversation about how difficult it is for us to get a cab, and we laugh about it, and sometimes we're frustrated about it, but we've never really quantified it. Amazingly enough, we've never actually went out and tried to quantify it. What we did was, we went in and we quantified. We talked to African Americans in Chicago, a major metropolitan area. Now, D.C. is not a real city, but Chicago's a real city where a lot of people take and depend on public transportation.
It's also the second largest group of African Americans third, New York, Atlanta, and now Chicago.
And now Chicago. And what we find is that 66% of African Americans say that cabs deliberately refuse to pick them up. And what's amazing about this number, and a majority say that when they call for a cab to come to their community, the cabs have refused to even come to their community. And it's so bad, we often see a bifurcation racially along the lines of when it comes to some of these racial issues, but even a plurality of whites in Chicago say that cabs deliberately discriminate against African Americans. So you don't even see a racial bifurcation along this discrimination. And this discrimination is impactful because think about it. When you talk about jobs, when you talk about food deserts, when you talk about information deserts in our community, I think we need to pay a lot more attention to discrimination in transportation because it impacts our lives.
Well, I'll tell you, I remember when I was talking to a city official it was a growing city in Texas, and I was asking them. I said, I was curious. I was at a public meeting. I said, I'm just curious. Public transportation. They said, oh no, we don't have no plans for that. And what people don't realize is, and this is people don't understand, when you see these little bedroom communities growing up, that is by design because they do not want apartment dwellers in those cities. They want homeowners. Mm-hmm. And officials will tell you, once you create public transportation, you are bringing in lower income folks, and they say, we don't want them to have access to our community. And I've heard the exact same thing here in Northern Virginia, other places as well. So, people don't understand the role that transportation plays in income inequality and race.
That's right, and we should hold some of our elected officials accountable for this. We talk about discrimination in a lot of places, but this is discrimination that impacts the quality of life in your community, your ability to get a job, your ability to get away from a food desert, and we should put this on the political plate as well. Going into this cycle, we should be talking to our candidates about what's your transportation platform. What are you thinking about talking about with transportation and inequalities in our community, because it does impact our quality of life.
I'm going back to the point of the Sandra Bland video and what she talked about, the difficulty of being black in America. And this is what I don't think people really understand. Just the daily stress.
Yes.
You're just trying to get a damn cab.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I can't even get that. And so so when people talk here white privilege, I think they often think that actually means in terms of, if you're rich. No, there simply are some things that you can do in America that you're white. It don't give you a poor and white, mm-hmm. that is still hard for black folks, even if you have money.
I mean, I run a black civil rights organization now, but prior to this, I would regularly walk into meetings with white staff who were reporting to me and watch as folks talk to them like they were the boss, ask them what the decisions were going to be. The day-to-day sort of code switching and movement and not getting mad or deciding to respond, all those choices that black people have to deal with every day is just another thing on top of having to live in the world, and it is something that people simply don't understand. It's the price of being black in America.
And you know, not only is the price of being black in America, it's the price of being poor in America. Because there's an assumption in a lot of conversations that you have some access to some sort of banking vehicle, whether that's a credit card or ATM card or a bank account. So people will give you checks you can't cash, or they'll give you, you'll get a job that's so far away that even modern day devices like Uber are not available to you because you need a banking device in order to use that service. Here in DC recently, there was a woman who was struck by a car because where she got off the bus from her to get home, she had to ride her bicycle up a dark road at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock at night because she couldn't afford, no taxi would do it. She couldn't afford a car. So there are there's the health issues of she's now dead, and there are the issues of not just being black, but being poor.
Yeah. No, I found one of the things interesting about what you said, Cornell, was that even when you surveyed white Americans, that they also saw this.
They get it.
Which suggests to me that even in 2015, it's so blatant that it's that this happens on such a regular basis that you don't have this discrepancy between the way black folks see it and the way white folks or other folks see it.
And you can't be against empowering. And look, these ride sharing, they're in a lot of battles. But when you talk to African Americans in these communities, this is empowering to them. If you have the ability not only to be an entrepreneur, but also have an ability to get a ride and have your transportation taken care of, why are so many black politicians fighting this?
Right. Well, and that's critically important because, again, you do have black politicians who are fighting this because you have folks who want to protect these monopolies. But if these cab companies are not servicing us, hell yeah, allow Uber or Lyft or anybody else to come into a community.
Right. It's empowering. And by the way, give a young brother a job. You know what? A young brother who's got a car and a good driving record, he's now an entrepreneur.
He's an entrepreneur. I absolutely agree. I think you have to just tax those companies because they're big Silicon Valley companies that don't actually hire black people in their corporate offices and don't play by the tax rules. So once we treat them, hold them accountable, the tax strategy, then we actually can make sure
the tax thing is a whole other topic. Yes. But yes.
Look, if you want, knock yourself out, you want to tax them. But some brothers and sisters, they like, look, I'm just trying to get to the store.
Right.
So it's like, do what y'all want to do.
I just don't want to eat at McDonald's again tonight.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes.
All right. Cornell, I appreciate it. Thanks a bunch.
Thank you.
Folks, we come back. Well, he's just going to say it for himself.
Hey, yo, George, Dr. Funkenstein Clinton here, saying don't turn that channel or you going to miss the funk right here on TV One. We going to do the dog, y'all.
Okay, you might want to get close to your radio.
My deal is we can have an honest conversation where both sides have some issues.
I love it.
I want to officially welcome you to News One Now with Roland Martin.
All right, first of all, I'm going to say this is time to join us. So tell the camera what you just said.
This is the rapper. This y'all got a speech impediment in your penmanship. What you talking to this?
George, always a pleasure, man. You're the man. Speech impediment in your penmanship. That was the first time I met George Clinton. We were outside of a restaurant. Was that the inauguration?
Right.
They pulled the inauguration.
Right.
Folks, you know, of course, George Clinton. You know the music. You know about Up for the Downstroke, Parliament, all just funky, funky, funky. Amazing career as producer, written on 144 different albums. He is not afraid to work. He is the P-Funk pioneer himself, George Clinton. He has a new book, Brothers Be Yo Like George. Ain't That Funkin' Kinda Hard on You? A memoir by George Clinton with Ben Greenman. Doc, how you doing?
I've been defleed, deticked, and I got my rabies shot, and I'm ready to bury the bone.
Is it amazing to you, if you look at the music that you've created, and you got all these cats today who are sampling, who are lifting, stealing, who are trying to emulate what y'all did?
Funk is the DNA for hip hop, electronic, you know, soul. I mean, funk is, if you got a booty, you want to shake it. So anybody that come along and want to do what we was doing, gonna need some funk. They may not need as much as we needed, and we needed it pure. They'll take a cut, they sample. That's like a, you know, like a DNA stem cell. You know, but I'm glad because it kept funk alive.
Your style, the music, the mothership, I mean, the clothes. When y'all were sitting around, did y'all say, let's just, how far can we push this thing?
We didn't sit around. We was flying around. I mean, you had a lot of inspiration during the 60s, you know, with all of that psychedelic era, the Beatles and all the hair, all the plays. Bro, you could do anything. Motown was on fire. You could just dream of whatever you wanted. So I dreamed of some brothers on the planet, kicked back in the spaceship, chilling. You know, I mean, you had the right to do that. Poetic license. You know.
Do you believe that? It's interesting. I was watching Unsung on Wednesday here on TV1, and it was on Kid and Play. And they were showing them in the dances and just all about having fun. And then they reached this point where folks in the rap community said, you know, you guys, you're not hard enough. But what was interesting is I looked at the clothes and their hairstyle, I looked at the dancing and everything. And do you think artists today have lost this sense of pageantry and showmanship and as opposed to just a group of dudes, you know, walking on the stage?
That's the style. Now, kids going to do exactly what you don't want them to do. They're going to do exactly everything that you hate. And so I found out that if I pay attention to them, I can pretty much stay with them or ahead of them. Because I can perceive what they're getting ready to do. They do. It's going to be the same thing in a new form, but they're going to do what you don't want them to do. That's why I like the music they like. I hurry up and learn to like it. You know, at first I hate it because it's going to put me out of business. But if I pay attention, I can hang around.
Why did you want to chronicle the story in the book?
Because of my court fights with the copyright issue.
Over your songs?
Over my songs, over all those songs. Mothership is going into the Smithsonian.
Yep.
It's going to be respected around the world forever. The music needs to be respected like that. And what's going on right now is a total conspiracy amongst all the record companies and music societies, because so many of those records, samples, were done with no law around it. They took care of each other under the table. Mm-hmm. Now, they took the money from the rappers. They charged them, mm-hmm. told them they was paying me.
But you weren't getting paid?
Nah, they were splitting it up amongst themselves, the record companies. And the societies, I mean, I've got them all in court right now, and you're going to hear a lot more. Because NWA just put their movie out.
Yep.
And so many of our songs are in that movie. But the companies themselves figure I'm too broke to fight back now. They want to pay me for two. Not even Atomic Dog.
Wow.
Okay. So, I mean, that's how, and it's overtly, there's a website, flashlight2013.com. Anything I say can be backed up on there. Legal document. Mm-hmm. And on page 379 in that book is the whole reason that I wrote that book. Once you see that, and people are only going to pay attention if you're doing all right. I didn't like the Unsung stuff on us. I had to rewrite that. So I did an album with 33 new songs on it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm doing another one for Parliament. That's on Funkadelic. I did the book. Okay. I'm not going to stop. I'm new record. Got Kendrick Lamar, mm-hmm. myself, and Louis Vega. I'm not going to stop till I get hot enough to where I matter. Because if you're not relevant, you can get on out of here, because all you're doing is whining. I'm going to be talking, and I ain't going to be whining.
I have said this numerous times. I try to ask this of every artist that comes in here. And I always say, so I'm 46, and I say it, in 20 years, if I'm having a family picnic, I would ask folks, will I be playing music from today? And what I said is, no. I said there's something about your music, Frankie Beverly and Mays, Philadelphia Sound. I mean, I can go down the whole line. That particular era of music, I can play it, and grandmama can hear it, my nieces, my nephews, my daddy, my aunts and uncles. Because one, I'm not worried about whether y'all cussing. I'm not worried about whether it's all kind of other language in there. But it's just something about that era of music that will get you on your feet regardless.
20 years from now, that ain't gonna matter. We all gonna be what we call cursing right now. They already doing it in commercials. They getting as close as they can to curse words.
Well, I'm gonna still be playing P-Funk.
We got as close as we could for our time.
Right.
When I was at Make My Funk the P-Funk, the Bomb, and Funky, that was a bad word. Funk was a bad word then.
Well, I use Bring the Funk every day on this show.
Now, I mean, we made it pop. We made it, I mean, they got Uptown Funk now.
Right.
You know, they thought we was gone, but we gonna still be here.
Yeah, absolutely.
But we need another, what do you say, 10% of brain power to clean up all these things we be talking about today. Because mm-hmm. this 10% we got now is running out. We can't rationalize none of it. We can't logic. You know, we play with words like logic and reason on computers now. Mm-hmm. It's just something for kids to play with.
Folks, the book is Brothers Be Yo Like George. Ain't That Funkin' Kinda Hard on You? This is his memoir. Man, I can sit and talk to you all day. Matter of fact, you know, we gonna hook that up. I'm gonna set it up where we gonna have sit down for an hour conversation.
I love it. I like to run my mouth.
And we're gonna do that. So I did a special with Monique. I got one coming up with Frankie Beverly. So we gonna make that happen.
Ain't got to make sense. We can just kick it.
George, always good to see you.
One Nation under Groove.
Absolutely. Chocolate City. And this is a chocolate show. For more news and information, go to news1.com. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the Emmys. Did your favorite actor get nominated and who got snubbed? Folks ain't happy about Empire getting jacked. Hit me up with your thoughts on Twitter at News1 or at Roland S. Martin. It is 14 before top of the hour. News 1 Now. And we keep it funky on TV1.
Your centerpiece for Black thoughts in America.
I don't bend, I don't break.
It's News 1 Now with Roland Martin.
All right, folks, yesterday the Emmy nominations were dropped, and guess what? Your favorite artist may have gotten nominated, some did not. Joining me via Skype from Hollywood is Hip Hollywood's Vanessa Barnett. Vanessa, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you, Roland?
All right, you got to follow the funk master, George Clinton.
I know. Who can follow an act like that?
All right, then. So let's go down the nominees. In the category of Outstanding Lead Actress in a Drama Series, Taraji P. Henson, Cookie, from Fox's Empire.
Cookie got the nod. We are so excited. Viola Davis as well was nominated in that category. And I think this is just a big year for diversity in the Emmys. I think people are very excited about this.
As you mentioned, Viola Davis got nominated for How to Get Away with Murder.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, I heard you talk a little bit about the snub. You know, Cookie was nominated for Empire, but where was the Empire nomination as a show? Lee Daniels was very upset.
So let's do this here. Lee Daniels posted a couple of videos on Instagram, and this is the first thing with Justin Smollett. This is what got this video here got lots of attention.
Yeah.
Roll it, please.
Jesse, what do people want to see on Instagram?
They want to see you.
What else?
And the people that you created.
Jesse's saying I have to be politically correct on Instagram.
You have to be nice. You can't be
these.
So everybody thought that he was cussing out the Emmy folks. That's how the story was written. And then, of course, Lee put out a second video.
Some of these people ain't got nothing else better to do but to hate on me for having fun. I was having fun. I love the Emmys, and I'm excited about my cast and crew that got nominated and for the other people that got nominated for Emmys. So, haters, shut up and go to bed.
If you know Lee loves to joke. Lee loves to be very active on social media, and I never thought he was going after the Emmys. You gotta know Lee and his sense of humor.
Speaking of sense of humor, you have the outstanding lead actor in a comedy series. Two of my golf buddies got nominated.
Yes, Anthony Anderson for Blackish and Don Cheadle for House of Lies. And this is huge. These guys are amazing actors. And I believe this is the first nomination for Anthony Anderson, which is, you know, he's just amazing in that role. But the show didn't get nominated. I was really hurt about that. I think it's a great show and very well written, but I'm so happy for those two guys.
Well, first of all, he just won his first NAACP Image Award this year after being nominated like 12 times. He's still getting mad because I got two of them. He only got one. I'm sure he's happy about that as well. Yuzo Aduba, Orange is the New Black. She got nominated for Outstanding Supporting Actress in the drama series for Crazy Eyes. Warren.
This is huge for her. Not only is the show fantastic, but she's so great in that role. But just last year, she was, I believe she won for guest appearance. And so to be nominated as supporting actress in this role is huge for her. She's so talented.
I want to roll through some of the other nominations. Andre Broward, nominated for supporting actor in the comedy series for Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Keep going, folks. Keegan-Michael Key for various roles on Comedy Central's Key and Peele. In fact, Key and Peele, they picked up, 8 nominations?
Yeah, this was huge for them, and they're an amazing duo. This is a big year for them.
All right, Titus Burgess got nominated for Netflix's Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. Niecy Nash nominated for Outstanding Supporting Actress in the Comedy Series for her role on Getting on HBO. David Oyelowo for Outstanding Lead Actor in a Limited Series for the role in HBO's Nightingale. Queen Latifah picked up a nomination for Bessie. We also have, let's go next. And I got to ask you about this one here, but that's Cicely Tyson. Let me tell you something. When she was on How to Get Away with Murder, first of all, she got nominated for Outstanding Guest Actress in a Drama Series.
Right.
Literally, I tweeted to everybody, y'all. She will get nominated and will win the Emmy. She destroyed that guest appearance on How to Get Away with Murder.
You want more of her. You want to see more of this character. She was phenomenal. And anyone who's seen any of Cicely Tyson's work knows she's a stellar actress. But this role was really just amazing. I there's no competition in that category for me. I'm with you, Roland. I would have tweeted the same thing. I should have.
Now you go.
But Candy Alexander from Scandal as Mama Pope, she's in that running too, and she was fantastic this season as well.
Also, outstanding supporting actress in a limited series is Regina King. She got nominated for American Crime. Also, Angela Bassett got nominated for the movie for the show American Horror Story. Also, Monique was nominated, same category, for her role in the show Bessie, the HBO movie, Bessie as well. And we did not have the photo. I don't know why we didn't. John Ridley was nominated for American Crime. Vanessa, did I miss any of our brothers and sisters?
I don't think so. I think you covered the whole gamut. This is a big year. So many names to be spoken about that were nominated. And I think we're just very appreciative and celebratory this year for the Emmys.
Well, we used to have a slogan on TV one called We See Black People Living, Laughing, and Loving. And so the Oscars certainly couldn't see black folks, but the Emmys certainly, they have seen black folks. Vanessa, we certainly appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Folks, we come back. Nicole Ari Parker, Boris Kojak, got a new talk show. We'll tell you about it back on News 1 Now.
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.
TV starring Boris Kojak, Nicole Ari Parker, Hip Hollywood's Jasmine Simpkins breaks it down for us.
Move over, Kelly and Michael. There's a new dynamic duo coming to daytime TV.
Babe, what are you doing?
Research shows that when black people dance on TV, it's going to be a hit.
Hollywood couple Boris Kojak and Nicole Ari Parker have their own talk show, The Boris and Nicole Show, coming to Fox this summer, and we sat down with them to find out what audiences can expect.
It's just going to be me laying on the couch in the lap of this beautiful woman. That's basically the show.
But besides their good looks and witty brand of humor, audiences will hear the couple dish on current events, trending topics, and hear them share their 10 years of expertise on the subject of love and marriage.
You know, we're not really reinventing the wheel per se, but I think the fact that we're really presenting both sides of the argument is going to be fresh and exciting.
And there's a lot to talk about.
There's a lot going on.
Current affairs, from current affairs to celebrity guests, experts. We talk about love and relationships, sex, parenting, health and wellness. There's fashion, there's cooking, there's so many things that we do on an everyday basis that everybody can relate to because everybody does.
And while it sounds like the couple who have shared the screen before on shows like Soul Food have it all figured out, they are still feeling the pressure.
When you're doing a test run, you have 20 shows and literally hundreds of segment ideas, and you only have an hour. And so we're really developing how to present like the best, tightest show for everyone that really just launches the whole thing.
All right, well, good luck, Nicole and Boris. All right, folks, some of the biggest names in black pop culture on the covers of magazines for August. Zoe Kravitz, daughter of Lenny Kravitz, she's on the cover of Nylon magazine. You also have Fast Company. Take a look inside the Obama stealth startup. Entrepreneur Damon John explains how he did it inside Inc. magazine. The Rock is on Esquire. Erykah Badu, she's on the cover of Essence magazine. Ooh, who says Serena Williams ain't a grown, fine woman? She's on the cover of Tennis magazine. You also have on the cover of Teen Vogue, models Aya, Lanisi, and Iman. Also, hip-hop legend and business mogul 50 Cent, who just declared bankruptcy, on the cover of Muscle and Fitness, and portraying or mimicking Diana Ross from The Boss on the cover of W Magazine, Empire's Taraji P. Henson. Folks, have a great weekend. I got to go. I'll see you on Monday. What do we say?
Wherever you are, we are your centerpiece for black thoughts in America. It's News 1 Now with your host, Roland Martin.